Well, if you are a fan of San Diego sports and the San Diego Chargers, we'd love to hear from you because this cannot be an easy day. The Chargers, the L.A. Chargers.
No, oh, God.
I just
don't even say it. Just say the Chargers, Grant.
You know? So.
Yeah, just the Chargers work for me. L.A. Chargers, it just doesn't sound right, doesn't have a ring to it. It's a damn shame for all you San Diegans. I guess that's what you call them. I feel sorry for you guys today. That's bad, man. You lose your squad, and they've been there for 56 years.
Yeah, Grant. 56 years.
I mean, that's not like
no.
that.
Yeah.
You put in some time, man. Yep. You put some work in. Too bad, man. Now, tell me this. Do you think Super Bowl will go back there someday?
Not unless there's an NFL team. There's no way.
No way,
but they don't have a stadium capable of it. That's the whole deal. Qualcomm is a dump. And so, no, you'll never have, the Super Bowl is not going to San Diego unless they have a new stadium.
They're
going to
tear that thing down immediately?
No, I don't think they'll tear it down because they play college football in there. But they
so just let the college kids play.
They're not
going to
have the
dump.
NFL. They're not playing NFL football in there.
Wow. Too bad, man. Great town.
I here's what I could see. I could see some rich businessmen mm-hmm. getting together with the city now that the Spanos family is out. I think the NFL would go back to San Diego if you could present a stadium deal.
Oh, wow.
I think they'd figure out, yeah, because that's a great market.
It is.
Would be part of the Super Bowl rotation.
Yep.
And so I could see that playing out if you had the right people in place.
That is interesting. You know what was interesting that Jason Cole, NFL insider from Bleacher Report, just said? When the Clippers moved from San Diego to Los Angeles, it took a second, but they found their traction.
It took more than a second.
Yeah, but and to be honest with do they really have traction now, or are they just a good team
do.
And
no,
people jumped on?
They have traction. They're a hot commodity, but they played in this sports arena, which was the worst building in the NBA for years.
Oh, boy.
Nobody
wanted
to go there.
Remember those wires, Grant, that were attached to the backboard?
It was terrible. Awful. Frank, you're on with Grant and Doug. Go ahead.
Hey, Grant, Doug, how you guys doing?
What's happening?
Oh, nothing. I just wanted to touch on
Hey, Frank, we lost you, man. All right, Frank,
there you go.
Go ahead. What are you saying?
I wanted to touch base on the Chargers move to Los Angeles. That just does not sound good at all. All these Chargers fans, my family is from San Diego. I'm a 49er fan, but my grandfather, mom, everybody is Chargers fans, and they're just distraught right now about the whole move, and we don't need an extra team out there in Los Angeles, like you guys are saying. Doug, I couldn't agree more. That thing, it does not ring when you say it
at all.
Los Angeles Chargers. I mean,
I just don't see how they're going to fill. I don't see how they're going to get a fan base. I really don't. And listen, the LA football fan is very fickle, and you saw what happened with the Rams this year. 22 freaking years, okay, and the last couple of home games, the place is empty.
Empty.
So I mean, it's not a good situation. That's for sure. All right, coming up this weekend. And on Saturday night, no one's really given the Houston Texans a chance. No, I haven't seen anyone
Nobody?
Out there. Have you seen anybody giving the Texans a chance?
There's some Texans.
All that matters is the 53 guys to come out of
that
locker
right.
room. Or that's all. Chester Pitts, a former member of the Houston Texans and their radio analyst, joins us. Chester, Grant Napier, Doug Christie, how are you?
I'm excellent. How are you guys doing today?
Doing Great. Good. Put me in the shoes. You've been a player of you know, in that locker room. Getting ready to come out. They were there earlier in the year. It didn't go well, but that was Thursday night, and that's for ages. But no one's picking the Houston Texans to play. So put me in that locker room and tell me what those guys are thinking.
Well, it's the playoffs. Finding a way to dig down deep and give everything in your body is what you're all about. One thing that we know that on any given Sunday, anybody can win a football game. And if you go out there and you play your best football game, it always, always, always gives you a chance to win. The tape from earlier in the year obviously will be very much studied, but in the locker room, all of the noise of everybody else and the pundits and the radio folks and the TV folks and all the talk that goes on, none of that really matters and none of that factors into the game. But preparing and knowing that if you find a way to get after Tom Brady and knowing that if you go up there and don't turn the ball over and don't have penalties in the fourth quarter, you're absolutely going to have an opportunity to win that football game.
Chester, how do you get Tom Brady off of his spot? Because he doesn't get out. If you can get him off of his spot, out of the pocket, you're going to make him make some throws that he doesn't like to make. Normally, he's in the pocket. He'll back up. He'll step slide. He'll do things like that. How can you guys get him off his spot?
So if you go back and kind of look at the tape throughout history and see the games where Tom Brady didn't play like Tom Brady, mm-hmm. you're normally going to see defenses like Baltimore's defense, you're going to see Pittsburgh defense. You're going to see defenses like that that have really made hay. There have been blitzes from all different angles. There's been some pressure up the middle. It's just been a constant barrage of defense playing out of their minds. The Texans know that, and the Texans defense knows that if they do not get him off of that spot, it is going to be a very long day, and that 17-point spread will probably be, they'll probably cover the spread.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that and knowing what you have to do, I expect Romeo to, I'm talking, to go into the booth, go into the lab, and create blitzes that Tom has not seen. They're going to try to find a way and do something that Tom hasn't seen before. But ultimately, the biggest thing is you just flat out have to play physical is all get out,
mm-hmm.
and get after the offensive line. That's really the only way you can get to Tom, because Tom, just by nature, I mean, they call him Tom Terrific for a reason. He finds a way to be the most prepared guy on the field, and he's got ice water that runs through his veins. What more can you ask for in a great quarterback?
Chester, obviously a rocky year for Brock Osweiler, but I thought he played very well, and it looked to me like Coach O'Brien was putting the brakes on that offense, knowing that Oakland really was not capable of making up the deficit when it got to be what it did. But give me your thoughts on what you saw from Brock against the Raiders.
Well, what you said out of the gate was exactly true and spot on. But in this game, that ain't going to work.
No.
That ain't going to come close to working.
Right.
Not even considering that being a thought. The way Brock played in that first half of the game, the most impressive thing about it was he went out there slinging the rock. Like, he took shots, he took chances, he didn't play conservative, he didn't play holding back, he didn't play to not make an error. So that, for me, was extremely, extremely positive to see, that even though he had had really a rough season, not a rough game, but a rough season, he went out there and played his best football game ever, after being the multi-million dollar quarterback that got benched at the end of the season for a second-year guy or third-year guy that has not had very many reps. So I think it kind of resonated, or what the point of benching him was and then getting that opportunity. I think he took that to heart, and he kind of made the most of a crap situation. He got his back, got his butt back out there and played football. But he's going to have to do that for four quarters, and he's going to have to be better than he was last week in order for the Texans to have a chance to win this football game.
With Chester Pitts, former Houston Texan, current Houston Texan analyst, looking at LeGarrette Blount, that said that he hasn't been practicing this week. Tom uses him a little bit to set up, the passing game with the running game. And last game, 24 attempts for 105 yards versus the Texans. What will it do if he's not at top speed for the Texans?
Well, I can promise you that if he's not ready to go, old Belichick is going to have a plan for that. So do not fall into that trap of saying
the banana tailpipe.
If LeGarrette can't go, we got this going for us. Don't be silly and don't fall into that trap.
I got you.
You ultimately have to say to yourself, as a Texans defense, if we cannot stop the run with just the front seven,
mm-hmm.
we're going to lose.
Right.
Because putting eight men in a box against Tom Brady it's not an option, especially when he loves to go into those four and five wide sets like he loves to do. Absolutely no question about it. You're going to have to beat him in dime. So that means the defensive line is going to have to play as physical as they ever played to keep the linebackers clean so that they can make their tackles in the run game. And when they drop into covers, that they can actually play pass cover. Like, they can flip that switch and say, this down is a run and this down is a pass, and not be guessing between the two. Because if they're guessing, they're going to be one step behind or one step out of position, and Brady's going to eat them alive.
Hey, we know you're from the Carson area, San Diego State guy. Today's news, when you heard it, you thought what?
I cannot say that I was absolutely floored. I thought that the second losing team in L.A. was always going to be the NFL or anyone else's negotiating leverage to always force every other place in every other city and every other governmental entity to step up and get some money out of the taxpayers so that teams ultimately will stay where they're, you know, stay where they are already. I can't say that I'm shocked because I understand the business of the NFL. There are a lot of fans that don't understand the business and the economics, and that ultimately, yes, you're a fan and it's a sport and we get all of that. But for the owners that sit up in the suite, trust and believe, it is just a business. So wherever that business is going to make the most money for them to put into their pockets, that's where that business is going to be. And a lot of fans just were, they found out kind of just the way it is. And obviously they're going to be pretty salty about it, but it is what it is. I mean, you got to kind of deal with it. You got to kind of roll with it. You know, I was shocked that it happened, but ultimately I know why that it happened. So I'm not surprised as to why it happened, because I know it is about making money.
The L.A. Chargers, does that ring with you at all?
I mean, it's going to have to, because if I got to talk sports next season, you cannot say the San Diego Chargers. You're going to have to say the L.A. Chargers.
Hey, Chester, thanks. We really appreciate the time.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.
You guys have a great time, great day.
Thank you.
Continue a great show.
Hey, thank you very much. That's good stuff right there from Chester Pitts. We got a lot of people on hold, so why don't we take some of these phone calls, because I asked some Charger fans and, you know, to give us thoughts. So let's get to Gennaro. Go ahead. You're on with Grant and Doug.
I heard about what happened today, and I think it's what just got said. I'm repeating. It's for money, because the only thing I can think of is just bringing competition to the L.A. area within the two teams. Are they both promised in contract for both organizations to stay in Los Angeles?
Oh, yeah, they'll be staying in Los Angeles. Absolutely. There's a long-term lease they'll have to sign and everything else, yes.
That's pretty much all I have today.
Okay.
Thanks
thanks, man.
Me on. Way over my head today, but thank you.
Thank you. Mark, you're next on Sports 1140.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate the time. I spent some time early in my college years, a couple years ago, down in San Diego. I live in Stockton now, where Dean Thanos lives, and he has a lot of property out here as well. I'm actually a huge Patriot fan, and I went to the Patriots game that was there, I think it was 2 years ago, the year that the Patriots won the Super Bowl. And I've always had this impression that people in San Diego at large are kind of apathetic to the Chargers. Like, they have a fan base, but their fan base isn't large like most other fan bases are. And I think when you look at the vote that took place in November, they didn't want to pay for it. They had voted for it largely no. And so I don't see how it's surprising that the Chargers are moving. I think it's weird that they're moving to L.A., but if you're playing in San Diego, it's almost like playing on the road every week.
It's been bad. It hasn't always been like that, but recently it's been pretty bad.
And I mean, if you think back to a couple of years ago, I mean, they haven't been great, but they've competed for playoffs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They usually start out slow, and then they come on.
It's just disappointing that season ticket holders want to sell their tickets to other fans who want to go and watch games. At some point, as a fan, you have to step up and go to the games that you paid for.
In your opinion, if there was a new Coliseum built down there, do you think that perception would have changed?
I don't think so. I don't think it has to do with the stadium.
Really?
I think it has to do with the market of San Diego and what San Diego is, and the fact that people in San Diego at large largely don't really care about football. I know they have a fan base. I'm not saying that people who are San Diego Chargers fans don't care about the Chargers. They definitely have a fan base, but it's not a very strong fan base in terms of the numbers. And I don't think that building a new stadium there, a new NFL stadium there, I don't think that solves the problem of San Diego. And I think that it would be a mistake.
Mark, we really appreciate you calling the show. Thank you. Ken, welcome to Sports 1140 KHDK. Ken, what's up?
Hey, it's Ken. Grant, you asked about people who lived in New York who grew up.
Yes.
Well, first of all, you know me. You used to shop in a store of mine.
Absolutely, Kenny. Great to hear your voice.
Okay. I was a little guy. I was a teenager, and I was devastated when the Giants left because in 1954, was at the game when Mays made the catch at the Polo Grounds.
Wow. That's still to this day one of the greatest catches in the history of baseball.
I was 10 years old then, so when they left New York, and I had a lot of friends who were Dodger fans, and we were all devastated. I used to listen to the Giants. They the old ticker tape recreations. I don't know if you know what they were. We used to get them, and they made believe there was a game going on.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
I used to listen to it almost every night. After what I was going to sleep in my bed.
Hey, Ken, for the folks that have no idea what you're talking about, let's fill them in, because the way games used to be announced back then is information would come through a ticker tape, and there would be an announcer that would look at the ticker tape and recreate the game in a room.
That's awesome.
Right, Ken? Isn't that what you're referring to?
And then they'd have noise in the background.
Yes.
Like people cheering.
Yes.
Somebody
cracking a bat.
Shot, people would be
yes.
cheering in the background.
isn't that amazing? But that's exactly right. Yep.
And we were devastated when they left, but it was all about money then, too. You didn't think of it like it in today's markets, but that's what it was.
Speaking of money, can you imagine if someone came up to you at that game when you were 10 years old and said, you know what, Ken? Someday you're just going to make a mint selling baby furniture.
We did okay. It was fun while it lasted.
Tell your wife I said hello. It's always great hearing from you. It was good seeing you at the game the other night.
Thank you, and we'll see you again soon in a few weeks.
Look forward to it. All right. He's a great guy. He's the best. I used to go into a store, and, guys, I mean, it was just, and Kenny would, like, rescue me. He'd go, come over here. You know, and we would talk about the Giants and the Knicks and the, you know, Ken saved me. Every time we had to buy anything like baby cribs or whatever, he would save me. Go, Grant, come over here.
Well, we got to recall ticker tape style, Grant, one of these
days. Absolutely.
We need a bat. We need some wood.
Yeah.
Out of the park.
How about that, huh?
Back. Oh, yeah. That's incredible, man. I mean, the creativity of someone to sit there and recreate it with sounds and everything. Awesome stuff. Thank you for calling in, man.
And again, you know, for the folks that you're talking about San Diego, I really believe the bulk of the problem is the ownership and that the city and the fan base said, we don't want anything to do with the Spanos family. And if the same thing happened here in Sacramento with the Maloof family, and whether it's perception or whether it's reality, it doesn't matter, okay? It got to a point here in Sacramento where people were not going to do a deal, you know, again and again and again with the Maloof family. They did not want to support the Maloof family because they didn't feel they were invested in Sacramento. And the fans down in San Diego, they are not – they don't want anything to do with the Spanos family. They don't. They don't want Dean Spanos in San Diego. And again, it's a shame that there couldn't be different ownership, because if there had been different ownership, the Chargers would be playing in a brand new stadium already.
Well, you know, the one caller before Ken called in, and he kind of mentioned, Grant, that it's not, obviously it is some of the Spanos and that whole thing, but that the football fan in San Diego is a little bit different, and they're not of the numbers that we might think they are. That's the way he was representing.
You know
it.
What? I agree to a point, and it comes down to winning. The reality is, if you had good ownership, the city of Sacramento would have put in their fair share. If you had good ownership, the fans would have stepped up, the sponsors would have stepped up, and this would have been a non-issue, and the San Diego Chargers would still be in San Diego.
I'm certain
of that.
No, that makes a boatload of sense, because with ownership becomes community relations. There are a lot of different things that galvanize the fan base and bring them in. They know that they're going to see a good product. They're going to get treated right when they come there. A lot of things that we are now seeing at Golden 1 Center.
I mean, if you look at, Petco Park down there, it has completely changed the Gaslight District. Is it Gaslamp or Gaslight District? But the baseball where Gaslamp District, right? And we played a preseason game down there 2 years ago for the Kings, and it was just amazing to be in that area. And then I went to a Padres game last summer, And after the game, that whole area is vibrant, and it's been great. And it's just it's an absolute shame. It's an absolute shame.
It's a nice area down there.
Oh, it's a shame.
I totally agree.
Dan, you're on with Grant Napier and Doug Christie.
How you doing, gentlemen?
How are you?
Good. I'm a Raider fan, but about that Charger move, it's got to be the ownership's fault. I think also it's kind of like somewhat comparison to how Art Modell did the Cleveland fans and went to Baltimore, where they didn't have no fan base at all. And so now he's trying to do something, which is hard to create a fan base there in L.A., which is, to me, personally, I think it's a Raider town. And, you know, L.A. Rams fans, they're barely stomaching on taking them back. So, he's got a tough deal to work with over there. And I'm pretty sure a lot of San Diego people don't want to take that two-hour drive after how the ownership failed them.
Thanks for the call. Let's get to Paul. You're on with Grant Napier and Doug Christie. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing, Grant?
You know what? I'm doing great today. I'm doing fabulous because you know why? I haven't had to talk about DeMarcus Cousins or the Kings even for 1 second. So this has been the best day I've had in about 3 months. What can I do for you?
I can remind you DeMarcus was punching a seat the other day, but we'll forget about that. Let's go on to San Diego. Like Belichick says, we're on to San Diego. But, I go there quite often. I'm a Raider fan, but one of my old students used to work for LaDainian Tomlinson, so I got to golf with a bunch of San Diego Chargers in his tournament. But I think Mark had a good point on that. And, you know, there's a lot of things to do in San Diego, and it's even when the Raiders were in L.A., you couldn't fill out the Coliseum because there's just so much to do. And, you know, USC dominated the L.A. area, everything else. But, you know, it's also an issue with the Padres. When the Giants go down there, they fill up the stadium. When the Dodgers are in town, their fans fill up the stadium. You know, I'll take it off the air, but the tricky part is I feel bad for the base that is there for San Diego fans. But then on the other end, you know what? Subsidizing billionaires for, you know, Coliseums, things like that, you know, that's hard to justify. You really don't bring in jobs. You know, you're talking vendors for 8 games a year. There's really, you know, not a—
I disagree with you completely on that. It does bring in a lot of jobs because the stadium and the infrastructure around the stadium has to be built by somebody. It's not just done by pushing a button.
And Grant, and to the caller, how many nights a year? Because I know, like, when we talk about Golden 1 Center, there's 41 nights that are Kings games plus preseason games, but almost every single night something's there.
Exactly.
When it comes to a football stadium, I know they got monster trucks. They got a lot of different
concerts. They have college games.
Do you know how many nights idea?
It's different for every city. They're not these facilities aren't used as much as an indoor facility for obvious reasons. But they try to get events in there, whether it's soccer, whether it's college football, whether it's high school football games, mm-hmm. whether it's concerts. Regardless, they do try to get as many dates as possible.
Does it help if it's indoor or outdoor?
It's easier to sell tickets for 17,000 for an event than it is if you have a stadium that seats 70,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense.
Paul, you there? All right, he's gone. But I don't, you know, here's the deal about subsidizing billionaires. The reality is, and we got to take a break, but I'm just going to finish this.
Okay.
Yes, you're right. But then the owners are going to move because they have another city that will roll out the red carpet for them.
Come on in. That's right. It's 4:28. Time to get ready for International Sportsman's Expo coming to Cal Expo next Thursday through Sunday, January 19th to 22nd.
And we're right back. All right. Grant Napier, Doug Christie, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Boy, did you see, you know, they played a game in London today with the Nuggets and the Pacers.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, did Denver just destroy them. Did you see the final score of that game? That was unbelievable. Denver won the game in London, all right, 140 to 112.
Mm.
The Nuggets scored 30 or more points in every single quarter.
Get 30, 37, 39, 34. That's old Doug Moe type of.
How about that?
That's putting up some points. The Pacers, man, 20-19 right now. I thought Teague coming over mixed with Paul George. I can't think of the big fella's name down low. He was a rookie last year. Really good
Miles
out
Turner.
Of Texas. Yes, I like him. It just seems, you know, it's a mix and it's a chemistry. And right now, either it's not going to happen or they haven't found it yet.
Again, it was all Denver today. They just destroyed the Indiana Pacers. Again, that game was in London. It's the fifth consecutive year that the NBA has had a regular season game in London. And not only did they have a game in London, but Adam Silver, who was in London, said before the game that the NBA is committed to increasing the number of regular season games it plays internationally. I'll tell you something else that he said, which is great.
Uh-huh.
They're going to look into shortening the final 2 minutes of NBA games, that it has become ridiculous, and that the NBA is trying to either limit timeouts or... Here's the biggest problem I have with the final 2 minutes. Why the hell do they call it a 20-second timeout? Do you know that when there's a 20-second timeout, they put a minute up on the clock? Why is it not called a 60-second timeout? No, really. If you want to have a 20-second timeout,
have a 20-second
timeout.
Well,
you know why they do it? They do it for TV, okay? But they've got to shorten the...
Well, just make a... You know, there's a... Just like you adapt to social media and a lot of different stuff, you have to adapt. So now instead of 30-second commercials and 60-second commercials, you have a 15-second commercial. You figure it out,
yes.
Grant. It's a 20-second timeout. It needs to be 20 seconds.
Yep. By the way, 18,689 at the game tonight in London. Oh,
wow.
Best line ever. Skip Carey, the late Skip Carey.
Yes.
Part of the great Harry Carey and Chip Carey. But anyway, Skip
Tubbs
was a longtime TV announcer for the Atlanta Hawks. And one of the best lines ever from a broadcaster when he was doing a game once, he said, "Man, I'm going to tell you something. The last 2 minutes of these NBA games have lasted longer than some of my marriages." Is that a classic or what?
That is really good.
But you know what I mean? But they are. It's absolutely ridiculous. I think they said there was a game played last week. I can't remember the two teams. That the final 19 seconds took over 9 minutes to play.
Wow. Well, do you think it's the last 2 minutes are lasting so long because of the instant replay type of thing?
I think it's that, but I also think that coaches save their timeouts for the end of the games, and you know, they after every basket, there's a timeout, and there's a 20. They're 20, and you know, 20s are not 20s anymore. They're 60s.
20s are not 20s. I agree with
that. And they're actually more than 60s because they put 60 on the clock, and then, boy, the horn sounds. Then the players have to walk onto the court.
Well, so, that's where you don't walk. It's 20 seconds, run. But, Grant, it's winning time, man. It's winning time. So don't you want the absolute best from your coaches and all that stuff during winning time?
No, you want the games not to last an eternity, and the reality is you're dealing with the best athletes in the world, and in my opinion, you shouldn't have to have a timeout every 5 seconds to tell the players what to do.
See, but then you come on and criticize and say, that was a damn terrible call by him, and then he's going to say, well, I was going to call a 20-second timeout, but Grant said don't call a timeout, so I couldn't set up the
play. I'm all for that. It's gotten out of hand. It's gotten ridiculous.
Yeah,
and so,
I think it's a little bit of the instant replay, and they do every single one. If you are going to call a 20-second timeout, make it a 20-second timeout.
Right.
That will speed up things. But at the end of the game, that's winning time. I want you to make sure that you're on point. So if you save your timeouts for that to close the game out, I understand that part.
I am all for, and I'm glad that the league – is recognizing that there's something that they've got to do. You want to know what the reason that Adam Silver said that the millennials have short attention spans?
Oh, did he really?
Said that's a big part of their audience now, and they're very concerned about it.
I would have went with what'd you say, but I'm not really a millennial, Grant, so that wouldn't work.
I don't know what
me.
The hell I am. I'm old, but I don't really know what that falls under. But anyway, that's what Adam Silver said. And you know what? I like that. I think it's great. I think it's absolutely great.
Grant, I think that you see, different than football going over to London and all these different places, basketball has legs. And you said 18,000 something in the arena?
Yep.
I mean, and I think that if you start playing games over there more often, they are going to come, and they're going to come in droves. Whereas football, it's going to be a little bit more difficult for football. It's 4:42, time to get ready for International Sportsman's Expo coming to Cal Expo next Thursday through Sunday, January 19th to 22nd.
The quote is, obviously people, particularly millennials, have increasingly short attention spans, so it's something as a business we need to pay attention to. And again, the last Thursday, the Rockets played the Thunder. It took nearly 9 minutes to play 24 seconds of game time.
Man, that is incredible. Now, here's the attention span.
When the last few minutes of the game take an extraordinary amount of time, sometimes it's incredibly interesting for fans. Other times it's not. The short answer to your question is we are going to take a fresh look at the format, especially in the last 2 minutes. All right, let's take the break. We'll come back. We'll chat more about this on Sports 1140 KHDK. Hey, Garrett Temple, as we promised you yesterday, will be coming on at 5:32 today. We'll talk with Garrett Temple of the Sacramento Kings, and we are very pleased to say that he will be joining us every week. So we have Garrett Temple, and we'll have more from San Diego with Bernie Wilson, the San Diego sports reporter for the Associated Press. He's on with us at 5:03. Sal, you're on with Grant and Doug. What's up? Sal, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing there, Grant?
Good. How are you?
How's it going? I'm doing fine. Thank you. Hey, I just had a quick question for you. What do you guys think, your opinion on San Diego issue that they have going on right now, comparison to the Raiders? Do you think that as a Raider organization and a fan base, do you think we're going to fall in the same category if something comes up to us?
No, I don't, and I'm going to tell you why. The city of Las Vegas really wants the Raiders. The city of Los Angeles doesn't care whether the Chargers move there or not. The city of Las Vegas will have a fan base for the Raiders. The city of L.A. will not have a fan base for the Chargers, in my opinion. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, that, and what about the backlash? I mean, in reference to the fans on how they're very displeased about how Mr. Spanos handled the whole transition of the team and all that. Do you think that we're falling in that same category, especially since, Mr. Davis really hasn't been vocal, publicly, in reference to really,
it's a great question, Sal. I think anytime a franchise picks up and moves, I think fans are always bitter. It really doesn't matter who or what the situation is. They're always bitter, and they have a right to be.
Okay, cool. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
I mean, because, Doug, the fans are the ones that always get screwed in this deal.
Yeah, they are, because they are the ones that build you up. They come night in and night out, day in, day out, and they support you through the good times, the bad times, and everything else. They always deal with the ownership side and the player side on a day-to-day basis, and then all of a sudden you just sweep the rug from underneath them. It sucks.
And then the little guy, the concessionaire gets screwed.
Yeah.
The people that make
my favorites, Grant. Oh. When I walk into the arena every day, are always the people that I give a fist pound to, because they make my and everyone's experience much better, but they're always pleasurable. It's good to see them. It's good to talk to them. You're right, spot on there, Grant.
All right. Lauren, you're next here on Sports 1140. Hey, Lauren.
Yes, sir.
What's going on?
Well, you asked a while back about being in Southern California when the Dodgers came there. I was a teenager then.
Oh, wow.
And it was really fabulous, because remember, football was just something they played in L.A. and didn't have the national TV coverage then. There was a major league team in L.A. that made us part of the national scene. And then, of course, the Giants came along, and that gave us an instant big-time rival, and it was just fabulous. I watched my first baseball game, professional baseball game, in the Coliseum, which was not a good place for baseball.
No kidding.
At least it was Major League Baseball, and we were there watching it.
Were you a baseball fan prior to the Dodgers moving there?
Cincinnati is all, because that was the Redlegs were about the best thing that you could follow from way out here in the West,
But the excitement level when it was announced that the Brooklyn Dodgers were moving to L.A., you remember it being a very exciting period of time for the sports fans down there, that you could not wait. You took this team in with open arms.
Yeah, because we were all high school kids. And it was, we could hardly wait to go. And when one of the guys' dad said, "I'll take your kids to see a game," we just, oh man, how much money do we have to put together for this?
That's awesome.
And it was just a thrill to sit the way up there in the bleachers. And
oh, that's great.
Watching them pop the ball over that short fence. And then, of course, prices were different. And when they got into Chavez Ravine, we watched that being built. We drive by and look at the construction on that at times. And then we used to listen on the radio all the time. My dad and I used to cuss Walter Alston at night all the time because he always left the pictures in too long.
Yeah, I love that.
And then when we got to the 60s and I could buy my own tickets, well, it was $1.50 to sit in the bleachers. And we used to buzz up. We'd get off work, change clothes, drive up the freeway, and be there in about 40 minutes at that time. And for $1.50, get into the outside bleacher stands. We took our own blanket because the breeze blew through there. It was cold on our legs. We had our own popcorn and our own coffee. The thermos would let us take it in and have it in those days.
That's I love awesome. That.
And we talked to Johnson in the outfield there. And once in a while, cuss Dusty Baker when he'd drop one. he dropped, oh, how many times in crucial moments did he drop a fly ball? But he was one of the best players on the team, so you couldn't get too mad at him.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you sharing those memories. That's great stuff. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Grant.
That's great.
Grant, neighborhood parks. In my neighborhood, we had the Seattle Pilots. Do you remember the Seattle Pilots?
Sure.
Yeah, my grandfather took me to a game out in the outfield. And
that's awesome.
Now it's Lowe's. Can you believe that?
Wow.
How disrespectful
man.
Is that?
Ron, you're next here on Sports 1140. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Grant. What's going on today?
How are you?
Pretty good. You know, you were talking about the short attention span of millennials. My daughter is a millennial, and her friends, they don't mind the NBA, but the football, they sat down and did an experiment with a stopwatch, and they said that throughout the whole game for the 3.5 hours that it's on or whatever, when they go from the time that the ball snapped to the end of the play, you only get for the whole game between 9 and 12 minutes of actual action. You know?
Wow. Yeah, no, I know. It's crazy really when you
incredible.
Look at it like that. I know.
It takes forever, and I think that's one reason that they don't sit through that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Anyway, just a thought. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you. Have a great night.
Interestingly enough, Grant, that's spot on by Ron, but I remember talking to one of my trainers, and he said, how long do you think an NBA player spends in the air during an NBA game?
Oh, boy.
And it was less than 30 seconds. I mean, it's a really short amount. Maybe it's like 18,
Can't
15
be very,
seconds.
Yeah.
You know, you think jumping.
Yeah. No.
No. And the same thing with sprinting. You're never really at the highest gear. You're in a trot. You're in a jog.
Yep.
You'll turn it up every once in a while. So that's interesting that Ron pointed that out.
All right, big news today out of San Diego. We've been talking a lot about it. We're going to continue with Bernie Wilson when we come back. San Diego sports reporter, that's next here on Sports 1140.